Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Tuesday, the 19th of June, 2018. I'm Joe Vicknicki with the local news. Harbor rates are going up in Petersburg next month, and voters are one step closer to deciding on an end to the senior sales tax exemption again this fall. Petersburg's Borough Assembly last night passed the harbor fee hike and advanced a ballot question on creating a needs-based tax rebate for seniors instead of the current exemption. Here's more in this report. The third and final reading of the harbor rate increase passed unanimously without any discussion and no comments from the public. That increase takes effect in July. It will mean a 9% increase for boats mooring in Petersburg's harbors and an across-the-board hike of about 12% for most other fees charged in the harbors. The change to the senior sales tax exemption did generate some discussion. It would end the exemption from the borough's 6% sales tax for local residents 65 and over. That would be replaced with an annual rebate that qualifying seniors could apply for. The ordinance is modeled after a rebate program started in Sitka this year. Several local residents have proposed the change, Susan Flint explained.
When we heard about Sitka's solution, we thought maybe that would work here. It seems like a fair, respectful solution to the problem. Refunds will go to those on state, federal, or tribal assistance. The needs basis we've been looking for without a bunch of receipt keeping or tax return proofs.
Supporters of the change originally proposed a rebate of $400 per senior or $500 per couple. The latest version would pay an annual rebate of $300 for an individual or $450 for a couple. But Flint suggested the assembly change those amounts if it wanted. The proposal is meant to bring in more revenue to the borough to help pay for services. It's back up for discussion because of Petersburg's growing proportion of the populace over retirement age and a squeeze on the borough's other sources of money. Another supporter of the change, Brian Lynch, expected a loss of fish tax from the state.
Given relatively poor projected salmon returns and an already severely restricted salmon season, coupled with China's looming tariffs on Alaska seafood, it is more than highly likely Petersburg will see severely reduced raw fish tax revenues over the next how many years? We simply cannot continue to allow this loss of revenue and expect to continue to provide services that we all expect.
Unlike in Sitka, a change to Petersburg's sales tax exemption requires a vote of the people, and attempts to sunset the tax break or make big changes have been voted down handily in the past. Seniors continue to highlight their need for the exemption, especially with the high cost of living and their difficulties paying bills on a fixed income. Another local resident, Cindy Lynn, explained the rebate would not cover the sales tax she would end up paying for utilities and other monthly bills.
I am asking the council to look at that seriously, please, and not just look at the food bill as far as 6% of the food, because we spend a lot more than that, to consider possibly increasing that rebate amount for an individual. Let's say $50 a month times 12, you know, is $600 a year. That's twice as much as what you're saying.
The assembly discussed the possibility of changing the rebate amounts for the third and final reading. Here's Nancy Strand.
I'm all in favor of putting it on the ballot, which is why I'll continue to support it. But I think there's a better chance of it passing if there's lower rebates.
The rest of the assembly agreed the issue should go on the ballot and approved it in second reading without making any changes by a 5-0 vote. Mayor Mark Jensen and Assembly Member Kurt Wallhuter weren't at the meeting. The rebate amount could still be changed at the third reading next month. Small luxury cruises in southeast Alaska offer guests a chance to explore remote spots in the Tongass National Forest. Passengers get a front row seat to look for wildlife. But there's another kind of tourism happening at the same time, big game hunting. That can be a problem when the two interests overlap. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story of two seemingly different groups trying to find a solution.
The Safari Endeavor was designed to give guests the experience of adventure, with the comfort of sleeping in high-end sheets. On this ship, you can wake up to locally sourced food and spend the afternoon paddling to a distant cove. Those perks are available to a small passenger list of up to 70 people.
So this is kind of the sun deck.
CEO and owner of UnCruise Adventures, Captain Dan Blanchard, shows me a favorite spot on the boat to take in the scenery, or roll out a yoga mat.
So if I were a passenger, is this where I could potentially spot a brown bear from the deck?
It certainly is, and it's something that happens regularly, brown or black bears.
So I could do downward-facing dog and then get up and see a bear.
Yeah, we might call it downward-facing bear.
And that's a big part of what Blanchard says UnCruise is all about, being able to view wildlife in this pristine environment.
Most of us that spend time out in Southeast realize that Southeast Alaska is a bastion for wilderness, not just for Alaska, but for our world.
The trips have become so popular, the company's even made a push for an earlier start season. Of course, this safari endeavor is a hunt for the eyes. But last year, on a different UnCruise boat, the hunt became real. As guests peered through binoculars at a bear, they saw a hunter shoot it.
My reaction was, it's bound to happen.
Thor Stacy has been a hunting guide in Alaska for decades. To be clear, it was a local hunter, not a guide, who shot the bear as a boat of surprise tourists watched. Stacy says generally nobody, including hunters, want to see that happen. Still, he thinks as more small cruises expand to the spring and fall, that conflict seems inevitable. That's traditionally the bear hunting season, a time when as many as 20 guides lead clients around the region. He says that's led to frustrations for both small cruises and hunting guides alike. He's heard the complaint.
There's all this country out there. Why can't we just, go where we want in the spring? And we're saying, look, we're already here. We have really important businesses for small communities in Alaskans, and our use has been here since the 1930s.
The Tongass is huge, but small cruises and big game guides can't just go anywhere. They have to obtain special use permits from the U.S. Forest Service. And that becomes a problem when the two ventures overlap. For bear hunters, the scent of an entire boat of people can throw off the animal's behavior. Stacy says hunting guides attracted some of the original adventure tourists to the region. As the small cruise industry expands, he says the game guides are the ones who feel threatened.
In America, the bigger you are, the better things generally work out for you. So when you see a large economic interest like that show up, and you're a group of small businesses, the fear of being pushed out or pushed aside is very intense.
Add to that, Stacy says, the misconceptions people have about big game hunting. He stresses this is a regulated industry. He's concerned about the sustainability of the bear population and keeping the Tongass wild just as much as anyone else. So after word got out about the bear shooting by the local hunter, Stacy says it was time for a conversation with the small ships.
We figured if we helped him out, the outcome would likely be much better.
We began to understand about what it means to harvest a bear and how that is controlled.
Dan Blanchard from UnCruise again.
And that, quite frankly, brought more, even though I'm not a bear hunter, it put me at more comfort.
In January, the two groups got together in meetings moderated by the Forest Service to hatch a plan. Hunting guides shared their knowledge and made suggestions on alternative spots for the small cruise ships to explore. There's now a voluntary schedule where the businesses can keep tabs on each other to avoid being at the same place at the same time. Blanchard acknowledges this new agreement so far has been a challenge.
It's not a lot of places, and probably when we go back, we'll need to try to charter some new spots for the small ships next spring.
But Blanchard thinks there's still room for different types of tourism to coexist in the Tongass. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers have beefed up their guidelines for wetlands mitigation in Alaska, elaborating on ways a developer can compensate for disturbing bogs, ponds, and streams. The idea of mitigation is that developers are permitted to fill a wetland if they restore or protect a similar property nearby. But mitigation is challenging in Alaska, where much of the state is considered a wetland, and opportunities to restore private land in the area may be scarce. Energy and Environment News reviewed wetlands permits in Alaska going back to 2015 and found the Corps had only required mitigation 26% of the time. The new agreement between the federal agencies says the mitigation can be farther afield from the construction project and may be on public land. It also allows out-of-kind mitigation, meaning the project may involve filling wetland, but the mitigation for it could be restoration of a stream. It's unclear whether the guidelines will result in more mitigation projects in Alaska, but E&E News says it seems to take aim at several of the justifications the Corps used to conclude mitigation was not required for particular permits. Seven Petersburg High School students and their Spanish teacher returned from an eight-day trip to Costa Rica this month. It's been about 25 years since PHS students went on a trip out of the country. Angela Denning has more on that story.
Originally, the students were going to go to Puerto Rico, but after the hurricane there, plans changed. The Costa Rica trip was organized through an educational program, EF, which stands for Education First.
I think it went amazingly well.
Rowan Barraza has been PHS's Spanish teacher the last few years and was the trip's chaperone.
It just seemed very well planned and organized. There was just zero stress. And then the students themselves were super well organized. They were always on time. They were really respectful. Made my life super easy as a leader.
The Petersburg group traveled with 46 other students and chaperones from California, Nebraska, and Colorado. Their itinerary was a mix of urban and rural, science and culture. They visited the ocean, a volcano, hot springs, cities, and the jungle, went ziplining, cooked, and danced.
Me llamo Noah.
Sophomore Noah Sullivan had been overseas a few times before going to Costa Rica, but he says this was unique.
The trip was really cool. It was a lot of traveling. We drove around in a bus a lot of the time with our tour director and going around and seeing different cities and landmarks and people and learning different things about the country.
Sullivan says his favorite part was meeting other students.
There was just a lot of really cool people that we met there that were, you know, from Costa Rica and from other states that we traveled with. I really enjoyed that part and being able to share that whole experience with them.
Hola, me llamo Sarah.
Sarah Larson was also a sophomore. She says her favorite part of the trip was snorkeling in the ocean, which she had never done before. It was her first time overseas, and she says the experience was very eye-opening.
Before I went, everything you see on like TV about those countries down there, it looks like very poor. And I always thought that that was just a generalization, but it's like actually how they live down there.
How could you tell that?
So compared to the houses here, their houses, like, they weren't very structured that well.
Larson also felt a deep sympathy for Nicaraguans in Costa Rica who had fled the violence in their home country.
Me llamo S. McKay. Yo tengo 17 años.
McKay Jones was a junior on the trip. It was his first time overseas. He says the rainy weather was familiar, but it was a lot warmer than back home in Petersburg. He especially enjoyed visiting the jungle.
There were some sloths and monkeys, a couple snakes, and quite a few lizards.
What were the sloths like?
Adorable. Just adorable.
Jones also liked learning about the efforts Costa Rica is taking to preserve their rainforests.
There was a point back in the 80s, I think, where they had like only 23% of their entire tiny country was forests and jungles, which was the lowest it had ever gotten. From there, they started to put laws into place and do what they could to improve that and grow back as much as they could and keep it protected.
The Costa Rica trip really gave Jones the travel bug. He says he wants to return to that country someday, as well as see all seven continents in his lifetime. And that makes his teacher very happy.
I mean, that's my dream right there, was just to plant that seed in each student of this desire to explore the world.
Barraza herself will be traveling again soon. She's going back to Costa Rica for 2 years to teach teachers there through the Peace Corps. The trip cost each student $3,200. All the transportation, lodging, and food was included. The students fundraised for about a year with car washes, concessions, and bake sales. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
You can see photos of that trip to Costa Rica on our website, kfsk.org, or visit us on Facebook. A regional theater company in Southeast has furloughed its employees after officials there say it faced several years of financial problems. Perseverance Theater Management asked its workers to reduce hours at the beginning of this month after canceling its most recent production. The Douglas Island-based theater had planned showings of Snowchild in Anchorage last month. Executive Director Art Roch says the theater company incurred six-figure debt in 2015 and 2016, with the second budget shortfall fall hitting the theater hard. Raj declined to say how many employees had been furloughed or the size of the debt. He says he doesn't know if the company will shut down without having more information about the extent of how much it owes. Juneau residents gathered at Savico Park last weekend to celebrate the region's mining and logging industries once again. According to organizers, 76 competitors signed up to take part in the event.
Stay with it! There you go! There you go!
Speed climbing, hand mucking, axe throwing, and choker setting are just a few of the contests that test the skills used by miners and loggers past and present. Bob Chernikov is a self-designated log boss at Gold Rush Days. He's been part of the event for more than 20 years.
Well, it's basically to keep the history going of what we're doing and put on a show for the locals.
Chernikov grew up in logging camps in Southeast and now works at Kensington Gold Mine. He's the vice president of the group that organizes the event, now in its 28th year. It takes about 2 weeks to set up the festival grounds on the softball field in Juneau.
Probably my favorite event is watching the log rolling. I'm not any good at it.
April Hoy's whole family competes each year. She came in first in the women's stock power saw bucking event on Sunday. She also competed in axe throwing and the speed climbing event, where she donned climbing spurs and a harness to pull herself 25 feet up a log pole. She did that event in 55 seconds. The event is free and family friendly. All the logs used this year are donated by Ralph Animal Austin. For KFSK News, I'm Joe Vicnicki.